and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Friday, January 31st, 2025. Cattle keepers are fighting in eastern Equatorial State.
So what has happened, it has caused a lot of problems in security. As I'm talking to you right now, people have been displaced. So many armies from different areas have come, some of them even we don't know them.
And health authorities in Uganda are on high alert.
The confirmed case designated as the index case is a 32-year-old male nurse who was an employee of Mulago National Referral Hospital.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Jonglei State say an unsuspected number of people were killed following an attack on cattle camps at Aru Junction on Friday in eastern Equatorial State's Magui County. State officials say there are casualties as herders try to recover looted cattle. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
The press secretary of Jonglei State Governor says the attack was carried out by suspected armed cattle raiders who targeted herders from Jonglei State. Biel Jake Lual says fighting is still ongoing as herders from Jonglei State attempt to recover stolen cattle.
On behalf of His Excellency's Major Biel Troop, Governor of Jonglei State, we have received with the deep sorrow tragic news of the recent incident at Aru Junction in Equatorial State. The people of Jonglei State, who had been gone there in search of a grazing area for their cattle, were unexpectedly attacked. This sudden and brutal assault on incident pastoralists has deeply shocked the leadership of Jonglei State.
David Otim Okot, a community leader in eastern Equatorial State, says the attack was driven by long-standing frustrations of some members of the Magui County community.
It's very unfortunate that we're having this incident. This is the second time we're having such an incident. Last week, the state government in eastern Equatorial intervened because we knew that the setting up of the cattle camps in that area first it will disrupt the farmers because the season is soon is beginning. People are supposed to start preparing their crops, land for crops. So the behavior even of the cattle keepers, what they started doing, they started displacing the community who have settled there. And they left, and this angered the youth in the area. Of course, bringing the culture of the actual community is not about the life of we are farmers, we are virtually farmers. And when you bring cattle like that, you invite also the raiders. You invite the raiders from all over the place because they need the meat, they need these animals and so on. For us in eastern Equatoria, we are vegetarians. So what has happened, it has caused a lot of problems in security. As I'm talking to you right now, people have been displaced. So many armed youth from different areas have come, some of them even we don't know them.
Mayor Mateng Wai, community leader in Jonglei State, says the fate of dozens of cattle herders, including women and young men, is not known.
The cattle camp of the Dingavor herders were attacked this morning at 4:30. They were actually attacked when they were moving, because the commissioner and the governor of Eastern Equatoria and commissioner of Magui County came to the cattle camp and ordered the herders to move from that area. Currently, the cattle are taken and they are heading toward Magui town. So far, the cattle herders have lost about 12 people and about 11 injuries. But the fighting is ongoing. The raiders have taken cattle and the herders are pursuing their cattle. So the fighting is ongoing as we speak. So the number is not exact.
Ilie John Haji, Minister of Information in Eastern Equatorial State, says he's aware of the attacks on herders in Magui County. He says the state authorities have dispatched forces to stop the fighting.
The state government, we have really learned this with a very profound shock. We have deployed our security forces there to go and conduct the investigation to establish exactly who are these people behind this attack. Because We don't expect such things to happen. And as soon as they reach the ground, they will be able to feed us with the information to establish the identity of the attackers.
Minister Ahaji says security forces will provide protection for both displaced local civilians and herders, especially those moving with children and women. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda, where the Ministry of Health says a 32-year-old male health worker has died of the Sudan variant of Ebola at the main hospital in Mulago. Government health experts say they have identified those suspected to have had contact with the deceased. Reporter Mungume Davis Rakarange has more from Kampala.
Dr. Diana Atwine is the permanent secretary at the Ministry of Health. She told reporters in Kampala on Thursday that her ministry has traced 44 people who are believed to have had contact with the medical personnel that succumbed to Ebola on 29th of January.
The confirmed case designated as the index case is a 32-year-old male nurse who was an employee of Mulago National Referral Hospital, who initially developed flu-like illness and fever symptoms and sought treatment at multiple health facilities. Postmortem samples confirmed Sudan Ebola virus.
The outbreak comes after the U.S. government announced the withdrawal of funding the World Health Organization. Uganda's health sector, which is largely supported by donations, is already battling mpox, which has claimed about 1,000 people, according to the Ministry of Health. Atwine says her ministry is up to the task, but she says it is incumbent upon the international community to work with Uganda to combat the spread of the deadly Ebola virus.
When we are declaring this Ebola outbreak, we are actually trying to meet our obligation as a country to make sure that we alert everyone, but also to make sure that our systems are activated and we deal with the threat in the country. But this threat can spill over. You know the issue of West Africa.
Ebola is a highly infectious disease which is transmitted through contact with infected bodily fluids and tissues. The symptoms present with high fever, chest pain, and difficulty in breathing, and may also lead to bleeding from different body parts like nose and mouth. A patient with Ebola may also experience fatigue, muscle pain, headache, and sore throat. Kampala resident Felix Mubiru says he now worries for his life.
Of course, I have to be careful. But sometimes I can't guard myself. You never know who has it. And of course, I have to keep on working. I have to get out. So,
Atwine says acts like hand washing with alcohol-based products or with soap and social distance can help in prevention of Ebola. She also says the health ministry is working on vaccinating health workers against the virus. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The 90-day pause on U.S.-funded foreign aid, along with a stop work order on existing grants and contracts around the world, has slightly been modified to allow waivers for life-saving humanitarian assistance. Still, many people across Africa, including South Sudan, are in shock and worried about the potential impact. So far in South Sudan, some radio stations funded by U.S. government have been told to scale down on their staff. Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo looks into what these developments mean for U.S.-funded humanitarian projects in Africa and has the report.
Many in Africa are struggling to assess the implications of the Trump administration's decision to put a 90-day pause on its foreign aid worldwide. The administration says the U.S. spends about $40 billion in annual aid, and it's time to review and prioritize America's core national interests, $1 at a time. Most development and humanitarian assistance is channeled through the U.S. Agency for International Development through various programs working with individuals, communities, organizations, and countries across the globe. Here in Kenya, While many organizations directly affected are keeping quiet, one employee agreed to speak to us on the condition of anonymity. We've slightly altered his audio to protect his identity. First, he says he's grateful for what America's aid has accomplished over the years.
We've been having a success stories.
He's among the hundreds who received a stop work order. He says he's most concerned for the beneficiaries of programs he's been associated with over the years, as he's not sure what will happen.
These are families whereby they were anticipating that we could support them. This will stop. There are children that were HIV positive, and we always collaborate with their facility to ensure that they are virally suppressed. So now they'll be of high viral load. And in school setup, you'll find there'll be dropouts.
On Tuesday, the administration issued waivers on existing life-saving humanitarian assistance programs, including core life-saving medicine, which may apply to health programs such as PEPFAR, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which works with partners in 55 countries worldwide. One of them is South Africa, where 7.8 million people have HIV and AIDS. Asanda Goasheng is an independent political analyst from South Africa.
South Africa is the biggest beneficiary of PEPFAR program and has been for many years. It will also have dire consequences for people within the region, because there are some people from the region who come to South Africa to receive medication. So it is a medical disaster in waiting, effectively, and a humanitarian disaster in waiting.
Addressing a press conference broadcast live by the national broadcaster SABC on Wednesday, South Africa's health minister, Dr. Pakish Motsoaledi, said, depending on how much aid ends up being withdrawn, he hopes it will not affect the antiretroviral ARV treatments.
One thing we want to ascertain is that nobody must stop taking ARVs, because that will be devastating. It will be completely dangerous. As you know what happened, when you are on ARVs and you stop, there will be serious trouble.
Through PEPFAR, the U.S. has invested over $110 billion in the global HIV and AIDS response, saving over 25 million lives and preventing millions of HIV infections since it was established more than two decades ago by then Republican President George W. Bush, according to U.S. State Department data. There are also other programs that can't afford a funding break, said Dr. Akila Udoji, manager of Karu Primary Healthcare Center, a Nigerian facility sponsored by USAID.
The tuberculosis diagnosis treatment, if that funding is cut off, it will greatly affect the program, because there will be no diagnosis of such cases. And then the medicines, people can't afford them. And if they cannot afford it, it will lead to serious outbreak of these diseases.
The U.S. Global Leadership Coalition and Advocacy Group welcomed the administration's review of foreign assistance programs in a statement, but expressed some concerns. Former CENTCOM Commander Anthony Zinni, co-chair of a council of nearly 270 retired admirals and generals, warned that the freeze takes the U.S. off the playing field and could directly impact U.S. military operations overseas. VOA requested interviews with the USAID offices in Kenya, Nigeria, and the U.S., but did not receive replies before the deadline for this broadcast. Meanwhile, the 90-day freeze is already paying dividends, a statement released by the U.S. State Department said this week. It says the review has already shown that over $1 billion in spending not aligned with the administration's America First agenda has been prevented. That includes programs providing certain contraceptive services, climate justice, clean energy, and pro-abortion programs for young girls globally. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, deaf people in Nigeria are empowered. Find out how after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Leaders of 16 countries from Southern Africa Development Community, or SADC, are meeting in Harare today to discuss escalating conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. M23 rebels, allegedly supported by Rwanda, have overrun the key city of Goma and say they will soon march to the capital, Kinshasa. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
17 soldiers from a SADC peacekeeping mission, including 13 South Africans, have been killed in Goma this past week. The SADC summit is being held in the shadow of aggressive statements from Rwanda's President Paul Kagame. He has warned South Africa, in particular, not to become further involved in the conflict. On Thursday, Kagame suggested SADC troops should leave eastern DRC and criticized South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa.
He's also there pretending to be playing a peacemaker role, and he has a force that has been fighting alongside FDLR and has been fighting the M23, because these are people who are not supposed to be in Congo. M23 are not Rwandans, please. These are Congolese, and one time he accepts it, then another time he says no, part of it is yes, and then the other part is from Rwanda, and these are and South Africa dares even issue threats about what is likely to happen after that, and so on and so forth. Of course, we will see what threats they are talking about.
Kagame says Rwandan troops are near the DRC border to protect their country and are not providing direct military support to M23, despite UN reports saying the opposite. The UN says Rwanda is supporting M23 for a variety of reasons, including profits from illicit mining of critical minerals in eastern DRC, which Kigali denies. M23 is led by ethnic Tutsis and says it's fighting to protect the rights of the minority group in DRC. Kagame, who's also a Tutsi, accuses the DRC government of sheltering Hutu militias responsible for the 1994 genocide in Rwanda, but he denies he's trying to depose DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. South African international relations analyst Roland Henwood says SADC countries have only difficult choices to make as they meet to decide what to do about eastern DRC.
How do they position themselves? The risks of a regional conflict, definitely something that is there. And then what are the options open to SADC? Do they increase the assistance in terms of military support and more boots on the ground? Do they withdraw and say this is no longer our issue? That's going to be quite difficult. The DRC is a key member of SADC, so that's not going to be easy. Once you've taken this role as a peacekeeping force, yes, there will be tough times, but you can't just walk away from it. If that is not an option, what do you do?
But military analyst Dean Wingren tells VOA the SADC force doesn't have the firepower necessary to drive the rebels out of Goma.
We still got a couple of thousand troops in theater. They're in a very dire, precarious situation. The main base is at Sake, which is about 25 kilometers to the northwest of Goma Airport. And that whole area is surrounded by M23 and the Rwanda Defense Forces. They are in a very dangerous situation in the sense that they don't have much ammunition. And M23 knows this, and they've imposed certain conditions on the troops there that restrict them to their base, and they don't have freedom of movement there. And the first thing that needs to be done is to get them out of that immediate threat area, and that needs to be done diplomatically.
SADC, the African Union, the UN, the European Union, and countries including the United States and China have called for an immediate ceasefire and for Rwandan forces to leave DRC. The United Kingdom and Germany are among donor countries saying they'll stop giving aid to Rwanda should it continue to support M23. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we go to Nigeria, where an estimated 9 million people are deaf, all have hearing impairment, and many cope with discrimination that limits their access to education and employment. But one initiative is working to change that, empowering deaf people with tech skills to improve their career prospects. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
This may look like a regular classroom, but here, assistive technology such as real-time captions and sign language is the primary mode of instruction. 3 years ago, Dr. Rowola Ayola launched the Deaf in Tech initiative to equip deaf individuals with in-demand tech skills, including data analysis, Python programming, software development, and web design.
Tech is a leveler, and providing tech skills empowers the deaf person to be able to do more, to be able to walk, to be more visible for employment.
Deaf in Tech also partners with companies to connect students with job opportunities. Ayola says the program has provided life-changing opportunities for more than 1,000 deaf individuals, many of whom have launched successful careers in tech.
The National Monitoring Dashboard for the 2023 election, and it was built by the deaf community. That dashboard was outstanding. That's what was showed on most of our national media.
Nigeria is home to an estimated 25 million people with disabilities, including the 9 million with hearing difficulties. A survey by a disability rights group, the Inclusive Friends Association, found that 90% of Nigerians with disabilities face systemic exclusion from education, technology, and employment, leaving them economically disadvantaged. This is despite Nigeria's 2019 National Disability Act, which was designed to promote inclusion. Victor Oricha, a computer science graduate, joined Deaf in Tech last year and now works as an instructor.
Here, the access is there. There's a sign language interpreter, you know. So everyone, even the staffs here, some of them want a language and they could communicate with me. So I felt very welcomed.
For students like Veronica Sunday, the goal is to use their new skills to secure high-paying jobs.
If I can get a job, of course, I don't mind. Also, it's technology-based knowledge, so I can use it to work in a tech field or use it to also sell my businesses.
To expand access to training, Ayola launched an online learning platform called DeafLearn, inspired by platforms like Udemy and Coursera. With more funding, he hopes to extend the Deaf in Tech initiative to Lagos, Ghana, and Rwanda this year. As Nigeria's tech sector booms, initiatives like Deaf in Tech are breaking down barriers and challenging stereotypes about disability, one deaf professional at a time. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
It's that time we hear from you on what you want us to do with this program. We appreciate all your positive and negative comments. We start with this listener, James Roy Majok from Unity State, who writes, "Hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus program. I'm in solidarity with the people who lost their loved ones in the plane crash that killed 20 company workers, including crew and engineers. May their souls rest in peace." Thomas Kuntoch from Old Fangak Payam writes, "I'm sending my deepest condolences to the families who lost their loved ones in the tragic plane crash in Unity State that killed 20 people. I urge the petroleum companies to put all planes on maintenance before trips." Mading Malual Aluang in Juba writes, "I want to express my heartfelt condolences to the families, friends, and communities affected by the tragic plane crash in Unity State. We are deeply saddened by the devastating loss of lives, and we stand in solidarity with all those mourning their loved ones. In this moment of grief, our thoughts and prayers are with the bereaved families and the injured, and everyone impacted by the tragedy. May the souls of the departed rest in peace, and may their families find strength, comfort, and resilience during this difficult time." Tok Chun Chok from Juba, South Sudan, writes, to me, the killing of 20 GPOC workers in Unity State, it's very sad news. And to all South Sudanese citizens in Juba and outside the country, I'm calling on the Sudanese leaders to check all commercial flights before they take off in Juba International Airport. Another listener writes, hello, Carol Van Damme. I'm Francis Oting Liu from Torit, Eastern Equatorial State. The closure of social media has affected most of the people across the country, and we urge the government to open the social media because most of the things are now being advertised online, even business through social media and other platforms. The closing of social media will affect most people across the country. Another listener, Aleungor from Warab State writes, I detest what happened to fellow countrymen and women. The self-claimed certified KKR, who claimed to be online company, has gone with money of people in South Sudan. I can't imagine how hard life is in South Sudan and the economic meltdown. I urge the National Communication Authority, in partnership with MTN, to track and defend these heartless people. These people whose millions were taken away from them are in great agony and stress. Samuel Remo Inyei writes, hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus and other African countries. It was a bold decision by His Excellency President Kiir to close down checkpoints created by some individual generals in the country to use it as a source of income for their own benefits, while the consumer and the people are experiencing the burden. We would like to thank our president and the governor's forum, which was held in Juba, for closing down the checkpoints. We always point fingers at the soldiers. Comments on this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America, nor the management of South Sudan in Focus. Keep your comments coming, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202-630-8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, January 31st, 2025. We now leave you with Pape Kale and the song Roger Miller. Listening to Pepe Kale and the song Roger Miller. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Shadrach, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.